Hello, my name is Elijah Bell, minister of 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation of Mount Zion, the 12th Hour in Elgin, Texas. Today is May 21st, 23 out of Sibian 2, 2027. We will start our first service today for the...
This is my Father's world, and to punish me here, all nature sins and round me reign. Have ye seen Father's sin? Is this my Father's world? And is me in the fall? Of rocks and trees, of skies and sea, His hand of wonders wrought. This is my Father's world, the birds their carols lay, the morning light, the lily white, declare their Maker's praise. This is my Father's world. He shines in all that's fair. In the rustling grass I hear Him pet. He speaks to me everywhere. This is my Father's world. Oh, let me never forget that though the wrong seems are so strong, God is the ruler yet. This is my Father's way, that God all is not done. Yes, one who dies shall be satisfied, and earth and heaven be one.
With a prayer, and then we'll go into the regular service. We're going to do 11 symbolic code number 12 is a kingdom like and under 10 versions. We're going to do that again. It's very present truth, and we're going to start with the first page, which is page number 3, and a prayer thought. It is a law of the mind that it gradually adapts itself to the subjects upon which it is trained to dwell. For if occupied with the commonplace matters only, it will become dwarfed and enfeebled. If never required to grapple with a difficult problem, it will after a time almost lose the power of the growth. As an educating power, the Bible is without a rival. And the word of Yahweh, the mind finds subject for the deepest thought, the loftiest aspiration. The Bible is the most instructive history that men possess. It came fresh from the fountain of the eternal truth. A divine hand has preserved its purity through all the ages, for it lights up the far distant past, where human research seeks vainly to penetrate. For the Yahweh's word we behold, the power that laid the foundation of the earth and that stretched out the heaven. Here only can we find a history of our race unsullied by the human prejudice or human pride. Here are recorded the struggles, the defeats, and the victories of the greatest men this world has ever known. Here the great problems of the duty and destiny are unfolded. For the curtain that separates the visible from the invisible world is lifted and we behold the conflict of the opposing forces of the good and evil from the first entrance of sin unto the final triumph of the righteousness and truth, and all is but a revelation of the character of Yahweh. And the reverent contemplation of the truths presented in His Word, the mind of the student is brought into the communion with the infinite mind. Such a study will not only refine and ennoble the character, but it cannot fail to expand and invigorate the mental powers. For the teaching of the Bible has a vital bearing upon the man's prosperity in all the relations of this life. It unfolds the principles that are the cornerstone of a nation's prosperity, principles with which is bound up the well-being of the society, and which are the safeguards of the family, principles without which no man can attain usefulness, happiness, and honor in this life, or can hope to secure the future immortal life. There is no position in life, no phase of the human experience, for which the teaching of the Bible is not an essential preparation, studied and obeyed. For the word of Yahweh would give to the world men of the stronger and more active intellect, then will the closest application unto all the subjects that the human philosophy embraces. It would give men of the strength and solidity of the character, of the keen perception and sound judgment, men who would be an honor to Yahweh and a blessing to the world. Patriarchs and Prophets, page 596. A brother who is visiting us has asked me to give a study on the kingdom. And with Yahweh's help, I shall endeavor to do my best to bring out certain facts on that subject. Let us turn now to Matthew 24:42-43. Watch therefore, for you know not what hour your master doth come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known and what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. These verses convey the idea that no one knows the day and the hour of the Yahshua's coming. And therefore the Yahshua admonishes his people to be ready all the time. Then he draws the illustration that if a certain one knew that a thief would attempt to break into his house at a certain time, he would certainly watch for him. But the fact is that no one knows exactly when a thief will enter. Matthew 24:44-45. Therefore be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his master hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in the due season? Now this implies that there are certain conditions which must be met by those who would be called faithful and wise servants. They must be giving meat in the due season. Matthew 24:46. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. We as a denomination, as a Seventh-day Adventist, should be able to reason out the lesson that is in these verses. According unto the verse 45, the Yahshua has made someone ruler over his household. Who would that be in the Yahweh church and the denomination? If we are to attach this to someone, it would necessarily be attached to the president of the general conference who heads all the work. Since his responsibility is spread throughout the churches and shared by the ministry whom he directs, it follows that they all are included in what the Yahshua is saying here. That is the only thing that it could mean. Matthew 24:45. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his master hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in the due season? Well, that's the question that's been asked. And we find out that he has appointed us to be this administrator of his office here on earth, the kingdom of heaven here on earth. And we are indeed in the position giving present truth to the hearers. Should not meet in the due season be a message from the Yahweh, especially addressed unto his people and applicable at that time? Another name for meat in the due season is the present truth. So then the servant is to give his household present truth. Matthew 24:46. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. If our application is now right, that this is speaking to the denomination of the church just prior unto the Yahshua's coming, then we must understand that Yahweh wants his servant to give to his household meat in the due season until he come. Matthew 24:47. Verily I say unto you that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. For this verse implies that Yahweh has not as yet made his servant ruler over all his goods. But when he proves true by attending to the business of faithfully giving unto his household meat in the due season until the Yahshua comes, then the Yahshua is going to make him ruler over all his goods. That is the promise. Matthew 24:48-50. But and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants, and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Yahshua of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of. If no one is to know the day and hour until the Yahshua come, then how could this servant be aware of the day and the hour? Do you see that one statement seems to contradict the other? No one knows the hour, the day. Therefore, Yahweh's people must be ready for the event to occur at almost any time. And if this servant does not faithfully perform his duties, then when the Yahshua is about to come, that servant will not be aware of it. Is that not how you understand these two statements? Up until a certain time, Yahweh's people do not know the day and the hour. But if they continue to receive meat in the due season, a day will come when this servant is going to be made aware of that hour of that day. For this illustration was not given unto us alone, really unto all of Yahweh's people, ever since it was written, and they were warned to be ready all the time because no one knew the day and the hour of his coming. But as the truth progresses and the word of Yahweh unrolls, Yahweh's servants in the end are to be aware of the day and the hour. Does it not say that? That is just what it does say. But what is the danger here? What caused the servant to begin to eat and drink with the drunkard? They said the Yahshua delayed his coming. There were only two occasions in all of church history that men complained that the Yahshua delayed his coming. They were the first or the early apostolics who had expected the Yahshua to come immediately. They thought surely it would not be very long before the Yahshua would come in the like manner as he had gone up. But lo, almost 2,000 years have passed since the promise was given and the Yahshua has not come yet. So there was a chance for the early Christians to complain that the Yahshua had delayed his coming. But we are not dealing with the disappointment. At the commencement of the apostolic congregation of the Nazarenes, rather, we are speaking of the time when the Yahshua is really to come, and the time of the end. For you know that there was a people on this end of the church's history who also expected the Yahshua to come long before now. I suppose you would say they were the Millerites, but to this I cannot agree because there was no delay for them. They had set the date for Yahshua's coming, and the outcome for them was not a delay, but a bitter disappointment. For the Seventh-day Adventists, though, since 1844, believed that in their lifetime, in their generation, the Yahshua would come and take them to heaven. You that have been Seventh-day Adventists for a long time, or even for a short time, know that it was their expectation. Instead, however, many of them are in their graves today. For in the early days, our churches used to have a sign hanging inside the reading, "Thus the gospel preached unto all the world and this generation." These signs have long since been taken down. For the 100 years ago, everybody who knew Adventists knew what were our expectations, but it is not the case today. I can also recall that after I became a Seventh-day Adventist, I heard the brethren say that the Yahshua will come almost momentarily, but the Yahshua has not come yet. For they erroneously concluded that the Yahshua would come in a few years, but it was under their detriment, for when the time passed, they became careless. For we see then that, according to our early expectations, the Adventists, the Yahshua apparently has delayed his coming. And inasmuch as no other people in all the Protestant world ever expected Yahshua to come as the Adventists did, then this lesson is applicable only unto us. Moreover, when at first Yahweh's people expected Yahweh to come, they all seemed to conform to the diet regulations which were given to the church to keep them apart from the world. But when Yahweh's people thought that the Yahweh had delayed his coming, what did they do? For the majority laid aside their Adventist habits of eating and living. They seemed not to have understood that the prescribed mode of the living as the Yahweh had joined upon them was not limited unto any certain time, but it was to be binding upon them until the Yeshua comes. What will the Yeshua do about those who became careless because they thought the Yeshua delayed his coming? Let us read Matthew 24:48-51. But and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants, and to eat and to drink with the drunken, the Yeshua of that servant, Brother Stephen Johnson, Kermit, Texas, Gilead Center, 2002-2003, this is exactly what happened to my minister that I was with at Kermit, Texas, from 1970 to 2003. It shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he's not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of the teeth. What a terrible disappointment it will be unto the people that for a time waited for the Yahshua's coming, once lined up with his program, and then departed from it. Unto these Yahshua comes when they are not expecting him. Matthew 25:1. Then shall the kingdom of the heaven be likened unto 10 virgins which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. It says, for this verse begins with the word then, indicating that it takes place at the time that the Yahshua comes as spoken of in the preceding verse. In other words, at the time that the Yahshua comes, the kingdom shall be likened unto something, the kingdom of Yahweh, as a crown kingdom, does not exist today, as you know. Then what is meant here by the kingdom? It is referring unto the people that are candidates for the citizenship in it. Who are the subjects for the kingdom of Yahweh? If they are not the church. Let's do that again. For who are the subjects for the kingdom of the Yahshua, this everlasting kingdom of David that is set up in these last days, in the days of these kings, Daniel 2:44-45. For if they are not the church, if they are not the church, then the people comprising the church of the Yahshua shall be likened unto 10 virgins. Because the 10 virgins deal with the bridegroom that cometh, and the bridegroom is Yahshua. And we know the story there. When this happens, the church is likened. Let's see, Matthew 25:2-5, and 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And when this happened, the Yahshua is likened unto 10 virgins, and the ones that were foolish had their lamps all right, but they did not take with them more oil than what was in the lamps. They therefore had no extra reserve of oil. What does oil stand for? When used in a lamp, it gives light which illuminates your way, does it not? In the spiritual realm, it is the understanding of the prophecies of the Bible that alone cause you to know where you are going. Only 5 of the virgins have the extra oil, for they had availed themselves of the extra oil during their time when they were a delay of time, according to the leadership of the church. The 5 wise filled their vessels with the extra oil during that time of supposedly a delay. Only 5 of the virgins have their shell. They had to wait them, avail themselves of the eggshell so they could refill their lamps and taste the oil that was in them and should be used before they reached their destination. For the light that came in 1844 for the lighting of the path forward was the truth of the judgment of the dead, which began then. Those that received this light called themselves Seventh-day Adventists from that time on. And the words used in this parable, they filled their lamps with the oil that represented the judgment of the dead message. Then came the tarrying time. This is what I was trying to think of, tarrying time. It is true that the Millerites expected Yahshua to come to earth for the saints on a certain date in 1844. He did not appear. They concluded, therefore, that they must have made a mistake, and there was no longer known by a name. It was the Seventh-day Adventists that expected Yahshua to come not only a certain day, but in a generation, in a certain period of the time. Since he did not come, however, they therefore concluded that Yahshua delayed his coming. Matthew 25:5-6. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him." For the cry to meet the bridegroom comes after the time of the tarrying. Matthew 25:7-12. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, "Give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out." But the wise answered, saying, "Not so, lest there be not enough for us and you. But go ye rather unto them that sell, and buy for yourselves." And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterwards came also the other virgin, saying, "Master, Master, open unto us." But he answered and said, "Verily I say unto you, I know you not." An announcement is made that the bridegroom cometh. All the virgins are awakened by it. If the announcement were to come from the general conference, you know that all the members would fill their vessels with the oil and all would have it. The facts are, though, that the cry does not come from there. All trimmed their lamps, we are told. What is the implication in that? We may conclude that while the cry goes out, the people trim their lamps with the oil that is in them. In other words, they begin to apply their message to the change and the circumstances or events. But what happens? The lamps go out. That indicates that what we had expected to happen does not happen. Instead, something else takes place. For the Seventh-day Adventists are expecting the war of the Armageddon to take place next. When they see something different come instead, they will become confused. They will then realize that the oil in their lamps, the judgment of the dead message, is not sufficient to guide them through this situation. Then they will long for the extra oil, the additional light, the message of the judgment for the living, which had previously been available unto them, but they had failed to obtain it. Thus, feeling the urgent need of it, they will demand it from those who have it, but it will be too late. By the time they arrive at the bridegroom's chamber, they find that he has already entered and closed the door. They knock, they plead, thinking he will surely open the door and welcome them inside. But instead, what do they hear him say? Verily I say unto you, I know you not, and the door remains shut. Probation has closed for them. Let us now identify the different personalities brought in. Here is the bridegroom, which is Yahshua, but where is the bride? And here are the virgins. The cry was, behold, the bridegroom cometh. This cry was not to the bride, but to the virgin. Now, the virgins can only represent the guest. Who is the bride? Let us turn to Revelation 21 for help in identifying who is the bride. Now, this is where Vichy Halef again went off track, and he got lost and his with the inspiration. Inspiration totally left him here, because he ventured into he got off the track. The virgins, first place, he says the virgins are the guests. No, the five wise virgins are the bride. They're the purified 140. They represent the purified 144,000, which is the bride of Yahshua. When he comes, he stands with the 144,000 on the Mount Zion. Revelation 14:1. They're the bride. 144,000. And that's what the five wise virgins represent. Okay. Let's go from there. Revelation 21:9-10, and there came unto me one of the seven angels which had the seven vials full of the seven last plagues. And he talked with me, saying, come hither, I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain, and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of the heaven from Yahweh. For the Lamb's wife is the city. Well, this right here is sidetracked Armenian Adventist from knowing the real truth. They were derailed because the Lamb's wife is not the city. Unless you want to say the 144,000, the purified saints, which is the Lamb's wife, represents the holy city, and which they do, they represent the leadership of the holy city. But the holy city is a building. It's a city of many buildings, not just one city, not just one building. But it's a lot of building, literal building. You see, John saw the foundations and the walls of the buildings of the holy city. Okay. So now it's talking about this holy city. In this case, the holy city would represent one building. One building. Well, but when you use that word city, you go to a city, you're going to find hundreds and thousands of buildings in that city. So let's go on. He did not see people. He called the city the Lamb's wife. If the city is the Lamb's wife, and if the virgins are the ones who are to meet the bridegroom, then who is the bride? And now here, Vichy Halef finally zeroes in on it. He says the kingdom must be the bride. It says Yahshua comes and sits upon the throne of David here in his last day, and sits upon the throne of his kingdom. Yahweh has given him the throne of David here on earth. So you mean Yahshua is married to his kingdom? Well, who is this? Who makes up his kingdom? The 144,000. So, who is the bride? The 144,000. the kingdom of, makes up the kingdom of Yahshua. Leadership must be the bride, for the people of Yahweh's church are the guests. For the people, in other words, the laity, the membership, are the guests, and are represented by the virgin. No. This is a... So Richie Halliff, he had a lot of confusion here. But anyway, it says, the five wise virgins, the five foolish virgins represents the terrors in the Adventist church. The five wise virgins represents purified saints. I'm starting with 144,000. For the same thing is true in this parable, as we find in the parable of the king going in to examine the guest for the marriage, one of whom he found without the wedding garment on. Those whom he examines are the guests. To summarize then, the people are the guests. Okay, it says, the kingdom is the bride. And Yahshua is the groom. Now he finally get around and said, the kingdom which is represented by the purified saints, starting with the 144,000, is the bride. And Yahshua is the groom. Moreover, in the parable we are studying today, did the Yahshua come to the earth where the 10 virgins were? Yes, he did. For he came where both the unworthy and the worthy virgins were. And where were they at? They were in the Adventist church. So when Yahshua comes here in the future to separate the 144,000, the first fruit harvest out of the Adventist church, and he stands on Mount Zion with them, so then that's where the kingdom will have its headquarters set up. If he came to the earth and had a door of his own to shut or open, that would indicate that he had a place of his own. Then he will come to the kingdom, and unless the guests enter on a time through the door, they will be disappointed when they knock, and the door will not be opened unto them. Since this coming of the bridegroom is obviously not the visible second coming of the Yahshua, to take to heaven his people who shall meet him in the air, we shall be able to find in the Bible something more about it. Let us now turn to Matthew 25:31-32. It says that when the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. Did these verses say that the Son of Man is going to come down on a cloud unto where the just risen dead along with the living saints will meet him in the air, as in 1 Thessalonians 4:16-17? Is that what we just read? No. It says here that at this coming, he will gather all nations before him, and then he will sit down on his throne and separate them. He will put the goats on the left and the sheep on the right. Moreover, he will tell each of the two classes what they have or have not done that caused them to be thus judged and separated. Do you not see clearly why we need the extra oil, the message of the judgment for the living? We as Adventists have been preaching the judgment for 100 years or more, and yet never even for a moment did we see that these parables were talking about the judgment of the living for the judgment for the living. If we never saw it before, we should now be able to see clearly that this judgment included the separation of the righteous, the 144,000, starting with them, the first fruits, and the wicked. You cannot say that the judgment we are reading about in Matthew 25 is a judgment that is to take place during the millennium, because his people are not then among the nation. There is positively no escaping the conclusion that it takes place in the time of the judgment for the living, when both the righteous and the wicked are commingled on the earth. Since, moreover, this work of the separation goes on among the people themselves, it is clear that it is not a work to be done in heaven, but it is a work to be done on the earth. Then shall two be in the field, the one shall be taken and the other left. Two women shall be grinding at the mill, the one shall be taken and the other left. That's the 24:40-41. Some call that the rapture, but it is quite different than what they think it is. Now, we plainly see that Yahshua in the Matthew 25 is talking about the judgment for the living, and in the connection with the subject, we find that Malachi says the very same thing, namely that after a messenger has prepared the way, Yahshua will suddenly come to his temple for the purifying of the temple, Malachi 3:1. When he comes, it is not for the judging of the dead in the heavenly sanctuary, verily for the judging of the living in the earthly sanctuary. And if the Yahshua is going to sit on his throne on the earth and gather the nations before him and judge and separate the people, where specifically is the Yahshua going to sit? Daniel 2, we find the description and interpretation of the great image which the king of the Babylon saw in a dream. We as the Adventists, and for that matter, not only we Adventists, but other Bible students, as well recognize that this image represents the nations of the world, from Babylon's time down unto today, for we also understand that the total kingdom represents the nations and their existence today. Now let us read Daniel 2:44-45. And in the days of these kings, the total kings, shall the Yahweh of the heavens set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as I saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain, that was the kingdom of David, which Yahshua sits upon the throne of it, making it his kingdom here on earth. Luke 1:32-33, and Isaiah's prophecy, Isaiah 9:6-8, and it shall break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold. The great Yahweh hath made known unto the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Daniel here describes how the earth's governments come to their end, not how the earth comes to its end. For he interpreted the stone to be the kingdom, and it is the Yahweh's kingdom that will smite the nation. Now Yahshua is coming from heaven to take up the same. As we Adventists have taught, Jeremiah calls the kingdoms Yahweh's battle axe. Jeremiah 51:20. What kind of language could be used to say that the kingdom is going to be set up before the nation comes to their end? For the trouble some have believing this is not because of the language the Bible used, but the trouble is with our preconceived ideas that were built up throughout the years, and the only way we can drive out our former erroneous ideas is to believe just what the Bible says. Now let us turn to Ezekiel 36:17-19. Son of man, when the house of Israel dwelt in their own land, they defiled it by their own way and by their doing. Their way was before me as the uncleanness of a removed woman. Wherefore I poured my fury upon them for the blood that they had shed upon the land, and for their idols wherewith they had polluted it, and I scattered them among the heathen, and they were dispersed through the countries according unto their way and according unto their doings I judged them. This says that because of the evils of Yahweh's people, disperse them throughout the countries. Ezekiel 36:20. And when they entered into the heathen, whither they went, they profaned my holy name. When they said unto them, these are the people of Yahweh, and are gone forth out of his land. For they profaned his name when it was said of them that they are the people of Yahweh, gone out of his land. Is it not profaning Yahweh's name for the Gentiles to have driven Yahweh's people out of their own land and become rulers over them after Yahweh had so miraculously brought them there and set them up to be the greatest kingdom, even the kingdom on earth, even his kingdom here on earth? The Jews were supposed to be rulers over Yahweh's kingdom here on earth, Yahshua's kingdom here on earth. They were supposed to be the rulers anciently. But they forfeited that by their evil, their idolatry, and their evilness. So this everlasting kingdom of David, which is going to be raised up these last days, is going to take the place of that ancient kingdom of Israel that should have been in charge even until now. Could not the Gentiles feel that they had successfully defeated Yahweh's purpose for them? For Yahweh's people have brought this great curse upon themselves through their disobedience, thus profaned Yahweh's holy name in the midst of the heathen, where they went. It has been brought up to me many times that the Gentiles took Yahweh's people captive because Yahweh was not able to defend his own kingdom. And therefore he was unable to fulfill his promise unto Israel. Thus was his name profaned among the heathen, all because of the disobedience of Yahweh's own people. Ezekiel 36:21-22. And I had pity for my holy name, which the house of Israel had profaned among the heathen, whither they went. Therefore say unto the house of Israel, thus saith Yahweh, I do not this for your sakes, O house of Israel, but for my holy name's sake, which you have profaned among the heathen, whether you went. It was because Yahweh could no longer tolerate the sins of his people that he, through the Gentiles, had to disperse them. For the heathen did not know that, though now Yahweh says he will do something about it for his holy name's sake, not because his people are good. The next verse states plainly what he will do. Ezekiel 36:23-24. And I will sanctify my great name, which was profaned among the heathen, which you have profaned in the midst of them. And the heathen shall know that I am the Lord. Yahshua, saith Yahweh, Yahshua, when I shall be sanctified in you before their eyes, for I will take you from among the heathen, and get you out of all countries, and will bring you into your own land. For those who ask how Yahweh can defend his name, now since the heathen have dispersed throughout the nation, for the ancient kingdom of his people, we need only to read to them what Yahweh here says. that he will gather his people back from all the countries and show them and the heathen that he will yet honor his name by the sanctifying himself and them before the heathen. Ezekiel 36:25-27. Then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from all your filthiness and from all your idols will I cleanse you. A new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you, and I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you an heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit within you, and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you shall keep my judgments and do them. Since all of this takes place, when Yahweh gathers his people from among the heathen, then no one can dodge the fact that unless we go into the land where the cleansing will take place, we will not be cleansed and we will not receive the new heart and Yahweh's Spirit. After we have been taken from among the heathen, Yahweh will sprinkle clean water upon us to cleanse us. By this we are to understand that until Yahweh gathers us from among the heathen, we cannot be clean. After he cleanses us, we will be without spot. For the judgment time, we must remember, is a cleansing time, as well as a separating time. For the judgment for the living takes place when Yahweh cleanses his people from all their filthiness and puts within them his spirit and hearts of flesh. This work is to be done for his people after Yahweh has returned them unto their own land. For this chapter tells us that we will never be clean until Yahweh gathers us from all the heathen and makes us what we ought to be. For the devil, however, wants to convince us that there is to be neither a land unto which Yahweh's people are to go, nor a cleansing. Let us read further. Ezekiel 36:28, and you shall dwell in the land that I gave unto your fathers, and you shall be my people, and I will be your Yahweh. For the land that Yahweh gave unto our fathers is Palestine. Because the children of Israel were dispersed, his name was profaned. And to show that he indeed rules over the earth and the people, he will gather out his people from the nations and sit them right back in their own land and sanctify himself in them. Ezekiel 36:29-30. I will also save you from all your uncleanness, and I will call for the corn and will increase it and lay no famine upon you, and I will multiply the fruit of the tree and the increase of the field, that you shall receive no more reproach of the famine among the heathen. If the land of our fathers in this chapter means heaven, there would be no heathen in the existence to witness any more reproach of the famine. And thus the last clause of the Ezekiel 36:30 would be unnecessary and meaningless. Ezekiel 36:31. Then shall you remember your own evil ways and your doings that were not good, and shall loathe yourself in your own sight for your iniquities and for your abomination. After Yahweh has returned his people unto their own land and changed their hearts and put within them his spirit, then will they hate their own evil doings. They will be genuinely sorry for them. This is the revival and reformation which Yahweh calls for, and which he himself will work in his people. Now let us turn unto the next chapter of Ezekiel 37:15-24. It says that the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, moreover, thou son of man, take thee one stick and write upon it for the Judah and for the children of Israel, his companion. Then take another stick and write upon it for the Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and for all the house of Israel, his companions, and join them one unto another, one stick, and they shall become one in thine hand. And when the children of thy people shall speak unto thee, saying, wilt thou not show us what thou meanest by thee? Say unto them, thus saith the Yahweh, behold, I will take the stick of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim, and the tribes of Israel, his fellow, and will put them with him, even with the stick of Judah, and make them one stick, and they shall be one in mine hand. And the sticks whereupon thou writest shall be in thine hand, before their eyes. And say unto them, thus saith Yahweh, behold, I will take the children of Israel from among the heathen, whether they be gone, and will give them on every side, and bring them into their own land, and I will make them one nation in the land upon the mountains of Israel. And one king shall be king unto them all, and they shall be no more two nations, neither shall they be divided into two kingdoms any more at all. Neither shall they defile themselves any more with their idols, nor with their detestable things, nor with any of their transgressions. But I will save them out of all their dwelling places wherein they have sinned, and will cleanse them. So shall they be my people, and I will be their Yahweh. And David, my servant, shall be king over them, and they all shall have one shepherd. They shall also walk in my judgments and observe my statutes and do them. For the ancient kingdoms of the Judah and Israel were dispersed. Now, however, the Asher says that he will bring them back unto their own land and join them into the one kingdom, where he will sanctify himself in them. When Yahweh does this with his people, the heathen will learn who Yahweh is and what are his purposes in the earth. I believe that the subject of the kingdom is one of the plainest of all subjects. In fact, the scriptures dealing with it actually need no interpretation if we believe what the Bible says, for it plainly states just what it means, and in the perfect harmony throughout his prophecies, parables, and symbols. For the only trouble there could be is that we have put an erroneous idea into our mind that there is to be no kingdom of the Yahweh here on earth before his second coming, or there to be no kingdom of the Yahshua, the Son, here on this earth before his second coming, and that idea has to be taken out, for it is unscriptural. Daniel 2 talks of the kingdom of, well, I would like to say this. Vicki Holliff is also wrong on just what I just read. I'm going to reread that. For the only trouble there could be is that we have put an erroneous idea into our mind that there is to be no kingdom of Yahshua on the earth before the second coming. Well, the thing is, that is the second coming. When Yahshua comes and sets up this kingdom here on earth, that is the second coming. And then when it gets ready to, at the end of probation, when the wicked are all dead and everything, and then he takes the righteous, translates them into the kingdom of the Father, and takes them to heaven. After all that's done. And that idea has to be taken out. Okay, so now our idea has to be left in, for it is scriptural. Daniel 2 talks of the kingdom of the Yahweh, saying that it shall not be left unto other people, but it shall will stand forever, and will grow and fill the whole earth. Though there will be only 144,000 cut by Yahweh's own might and taken to Mount Zion, yet they are servants, and as the first fruits, Revelation 7, 1-8, and Revelation 14, 1-5, are together in the great multitude, which no man could number, of the Revelation 7, 9-10, thus will they enlarge the kingdom that is finally to fill the earth. That is what to Yashir's purpose to do with his people. If we would be among the wise virgins, we will not fight against Yahweh setting up his kingdom, but rather we will study about it, and thus procure the extra oil. We will work for it, and we will also certainly, with understanding, pray as Yahshua himself taught us, Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done in the earth as it is in the heaven. This brings the end of our step to our contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Click on the audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.
So the storm passes by, the dark of the midnight, of a heart did not fade. How the storm howled above me, and there's no hiding place. Did the crash of the thunder precious Yah in my trust keep me safe till the storm passes by, till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds roll forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of Thy hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. Many times Satan whispers, there is no use to try, for there's no end of sorrow, there is no hope by and by. But I know Thou art with me, and tomorrow I'll rise, where the storm never darkens the sky. Where the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the cloud grow forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of Thy hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. When the long night has ended and the storms come no more, let me stand in the presence of the bright and peaceful shore, in the land where the tempest never come yet may pass. Gravity peace when the storm passes by. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds go forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of Thy hand. Keep me safe